It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. Welcome aboard. Welcome, Jules. All right, again, I feel like I say this every week because I do. It's a packed show. We had the Clásico at the weekend. We had United against Chelsea. Bit of a stinker, but still plenty to talk about there. Juventus, Bayern, lots of good stuff, but it's obviously just one place to start. The biggest game in football, or so Javier Tebas tells us. We're joined by Sid Lowe. Sid, right off the top. A 3-1 win, if you include Luka Modric's garbage time winner, which I guess, strictly speaking, you need to do. Sid, does it mean everything is fine now with Zinedine Zidane?
Well, sort of, yeah. I mean, look, some of the underlying issues are still there. But I think, in a way, this was always quite likely, wasn't it? We knew that the context of the Shakhtar Donetsk game and the Cardiff game were that it was Shakhtar Donetsk and Cardiff. But part of Real Madrid's problem has often been responding in those kind of games, that there were changes in the squad that meant that the not winning was quite likely. It's true that both of those games, the first halves in particular, were absolutely dreadful and that the pressure had built. But Zidane, I think Zidane summed it up brilliantly in the build-up to this game. When he was asked, do you feel like, there's a great Spanish phrase, se la juega, which you can't really properly translate, I suppose, is, do you think you've got something in play more than the result? You know, is your job, not, it's implicitly, is your job on the line? Or, you know, are you under massive pressure here? And Zidane said, yeah, like last year, and like the first time I was at the club. And Zidane knows this. And he then said, the sun will come out again. Yeah. And it did on Saturday. Because
What else is the great stone face going to say here?
Well, and that's it. But also, as I say, he has this ability, Zidane. There's a lovely line in one of the Spanish papers this weekend that said, Zidane walks up to the gallows a lot, but he always turns around.
That's brilliant. Brilliantly put. Now, in terms of the way Zidane approached this, I was impressed with the fact that, you know, we've seen in the past, does he add another midfielder, control the game, which is another way to say limit damage. He went for it, I thought, by putting Asensio in there with Vinicius and Benzema up front. And to be fair, I thought Ronald Koeman said, all right, well, if I'm going to fall here, I'm going to fall my way on my own hill. No Griezmann from the start. He went for that 4-2 chaos formation with two 17-year-olds in the front four. Sid, there will be a bit of an inquest, but should we... and by the way, I am purposely not talking about the VAR penalty because Jules and I agree it was a penalty, right?
Yeah, I thought 100%.
So let's not go and debate this endlessly. I know how much you love VAR debates, Sid, so I will spare you that one. But that aside, just in terms of what we saw unfold on the pitch, Koeman did things his way. Can we at least give him credit for sticking to his ideas, for being progressive, for believing in himself, for showing that belief in his players?
That is really kind from you.
Or are we not even going to go
that
far?
That's really kind.
Well, it depends what you mean. Are we saying, you know, good on him for having his ideas? I think on one level, you can say there was a determination there and a clarity in the sense that he chose to play with two 17-year-olds. He played Ansu Fati and Pedri. In truth, though, choosing Ansu Fati isn't a big decision. Everyone knows you've got to put Ansu Fati in the team. The question mark was Pedri, who had played very well building up to this game, but I think he played very well from a central position. And so he puts him in, but he puts him on the right-hand side. And it comes back to this thing that I keep complaining about with Barcelona. They have a whole load of people all trying to gravitate towards the same space on the pitch consistently. And this time round, so he puts Messi behind Fati. So he's had two people perform really well directly behind the forward, and those have been Coutinho and Pedri. So he puts them both in, but he puts them both on the wings, forced to come inside. Coutinho coming inside off the left on his right foot, Pedri coming inside off the right on his left foot, and so you get this kind of conglomeration of players again. So that chaos is not really resolved by this.
Now, Jules, this is an age-old thing, but at least he fixed it quickly early in the second half when he saw it wasn't working and he made all those substitutions, right?
Yeah,
he didn't. He waited until the 82nd minute.
When they were 2-1 down after an hour and he waited all that time. We can't praise someone who got everything wrong. I don't know why you asked that question about should we give him credit. Credit for what? He got everything wrong. He got his starting 11 wrong. And I'm sorry, Pedri would be a very good player soon or in a few years, but he's not ready for a game.
It would have been all different.
He's not ready. I'm not saying
he would be... But Jules, I don't think it's a question of him not being ready. I think he could have been ready if he'd been playing in his position, but he wasn't.
Yeah, maybe as well, but maybe he wasn't ready because he was completely playing off position as well. But, you know, you can't say anything positive about Koeman when he was... everything that he did was wrong.
What I found disconcerting, obviously a lot of focus is on the front four, Sid, but There were times in that match in the second half when Messi does the Messi. Messi had a quiet game, and I think obviously if Messi's on form, he had that really cool turn and everything was special.
Six Clasicos with no goals, no assists.
That's fine, but I'm less concerned with that. But I thought there were times in the second half when Messi does the thing where he goes and he gets the ball off Gerard Piqué and sits way deep, and I look up and Frankie de Jong is way up, almost we're filling Messi's space. Almost in like a forward position. Everybody's kind of in a line up there. I'm thinking to myself, this is horrendous. I don't need to see this. Why? I mean, is there also an argument to be made that that midfield really isn't working either?
I completely agree that midfield isn't working. I think that's one of the reasons why Messi drops deep. Let me just slightly defend Messi a little bit, because I think that Messi's performance is the kind of the performance that, because it's Messi, we think he didn't play well. If anyone else on the pitch puts in that performance, we think he's had an absolutely fantastic game. Messi, until the 60th minute, for what it's worth, I think in the last half an hour, he does drift out of the game. And curiously enough, he drifts out of the game at the point in which people start to relentlessly look for him because they've got no ideas of their own, because they pass on the ball to him increasingly. But you look at the stats, for example, he touches the ball more than anyone else on the pitch. This is a quiet game. Now, I'm not saying that's perfect, because of course it's not perfect to get the ball all the time, but the first goal comes from a pass from him. He gets taken down just inside the area and just outside the area, and two brilliant runs through the middle. He has the one that Courtois saves. If anyone else on the pitch does that, we say, "Whoa, right. What a good game!"
But the thing is,
Messi set his own bar too
right.
high,
and he's also paid accordingly. He's also paid accordingly for that, and that's why we hold him to a higher standard. I don't want to hear this thing about anybody else.
In fairness,
yeah, and he deserves it.
I don't think we do hold him to higher standards because he's paid that much money. I think we hold him to higher standards because he's the best player in the world. That's why we hold him to standards. Not because of money. There are plenty of really bad players get paid a lot of money if we don't ask them to do very much.
I have my own view here. As you know, I'm all about resource allocation. And if you allocate that many resources to somebody, then you expect that standard. But yes, he has delivered on it. He's the greatest player in the world and one, if not the greatest player ever. He's certainly up there. But Jules, you have a bee in your bonnet. We were talking about the midfield before, about Busquets.
I have an issue. And I don't want to be too harsh because he's a club legend. He was fantastic in these holding positions. You know, everything.
We know his history. Get on with it. What's the issue with Busquets now?
Because he cannot play anymore in those kind of games. This is finished. He can't run anymore. He can't put any pressure on anyone. I mean, Valverde's goal, after 5 minutes, so you can't tell me, but Busquets must have been tired of all the kilometers he'd run. It was 5 minutes into the game. He couldn't even follow Valverde on his run. Valverde ran past him like if Busquets wasn't there. I just don't think, as good technically as he is, the great vision and everything you want, I don't think he can play in those games anymore. And I think the problem is that De Jong, I don't think De Jong can play his game naturally because there's Busquets next to him, and I think he has to do far more to help Busquets than he would do in a normal setup with another double pivot in midfield that would run more and have a bigger activity than Busquets, for example.
Sid, your thoughts? I mean, might a solution be just ditching Busquets, asking De Jong to play the Busquets role, which isn't entirely dissimilar to what he did at Ajax, and bringing somebody else in midfield?
Well, I think that's the question, isn't it? If you make De Jong play the Busquets role, I think you have to restructure the midfield. And I think there's a very strange there's all sorts of elements to this, right? One of them is to start with where Jules comes in, and with a very heavy heart, I think broadly I agree that Busquets has been a great player, but I hesitate to use the word, but has been, and I worry that he may not be that player anymore. That said, I think there are some elements here which maybe help to explain it and maybe help to justify him a little bit, which are not all about him. And one of them is contradictory though it sounds, I think one of the reasons why Koeman has gone for 4-2-3-1 is because he believes that he has to have some alongside Busquets to protect him, because Busquets cannot play that role on his own. But I think the reality of 4-2-3-1, and we come back to what we were saying earlier about the fact that this 4-2-3-1 is actually a 4-2 splurge. That's what it is, because it's 4-2, and then it's four other players sort of in a blob somewhere at the top of the pitch.
I like 4-2 chaos myself, but 4-2 splurge is good too.
The reality of it is, I think, I mean, you know, and there may well be far better technical and tactical analysts out there than me, in fact, there definitely are, is that if you play those two, Busquets and De Jong, alongside each other, parallel, not alongside each other staggered, but alongside each other parallels, as what Spanish refer to as a double pivot, what happens? I think what happens is that you get runners going through the inside and right and inside left channel right through the middle of a massive hole in midfield. By the time they reach the point of the pitch at which Busquets and De Jong are waiting for them, or the point of the pitch at which Busquets and De Jong dare to step up towards them, they're already on the run. And they just go straight past both of them. I think it's that structure exposes those two. Look at you say Busquets allows Fede Valverde to run. He does, just to the right of the middle of the pitch, isn't it? It's sort of an inside right sort of position. Look at the third goal. De Jong allows Luka Modric to run through almost exactly the same space. Now, I think part of this is structural. I think it's about those two players. And for what it's worth, De Jong's been at Barcelona for a year now. Theoretically, he now has the manager who understands him, who knows where to play him, who even said publicly, I was watching him last year and they were putting him in the wrong position. What have we seen from De Jong? Have we seen a single really outstanding game from De Jong? And that's not necessarily about blaming De Jong. It's about there is something bigger, I think, than just these two players. And I think part of the problem is that the solution has been, well, they kind of protect each other if they play together. But if they play together with no one else, and there is no one else in that midfield, it's two men and in a massive bloody great space, then there's no protection for either of them. And I think both of them are both culpable, but I also think they are both victims of this structure that doesn't work. So if you say play De Jong instead of Busquets, I would say, I agree with you. But if that's going to happen, put two midfielders with him, one either side in a midfield three, not as a double pivot.
Yeah, Pjanic and Sergio Roberto, aren't we excited? look, let's... I don't just want to hear and like just keep having a go at Barcelona, but I do need to ask you just quickly. This business that's happening with Bartomeu, can you explain it quickly and is it relevant? I appreciate it hasn't happened yet, but just in case, let's cover our backsides.
Well, essentially, because of the pandemic, Barcelona's board of directors are discussing with the local government, and they are saying that because of the pandemic, the vote of no confidence can't happen yet. Now, as you can probably imagine, opposition figures believe that this is a stalling tactic, and that this is trying to put it back, and that they've tried everything so far.
How could you possibly have elections during the pandemic? Yeah.
Who does that?
Right.
Well,
who should cancel all elections? Who? There's a big one happening in the States. It's crazy what's happening.
Mental.
Just give them automatic one-year extension.
For what it's worth, there is that debate about whether or not this is sensible. But as I say, opposition figures saying, well, this is clearly a way of trying to kind of hold back the tide. We've already seen them go to the Guardia Civil and say that some of the votes are not right, to try and hold things back, to try and slow things down. I'm not really entirely sure I understand fully what they gain by doing that, unless they can hold it back so long that they get the next transfer window to try and fix some of their financial problems.
Right.
The other thing in all of this is it now appears plausible, possibly even more than plausible, that today they resign anyway and they walk out, and no one will lament their passing.
That would be something. I think we need to show a little bit more love to Real Madrid, because in the end, you know, they did turn around. And look, there's a simple explanation, and I don't like simple explanations, but it feels right. Sergio Ramos returns, and all of a sudden, all is well. They have the leader, the chest beating.
He can't sort out the defensive line, though, because on the first goal, they're all over the place. On the only goal from Barcelona, it's a simple ball through by Messi to Alba.
No,
but I'm all for the leadership of Sergio Ramos and how great he is, but that defensive line...
He could have scored a hat-trick.
No, I'm not talking about that. He's a defender. Talk to me about defending, you know, and that line was still over the place. But your point still stands.
No, I mean, look, with Ramos, it is oversimplistic, although it's, by the way, it's part, it's the fundamental narrative of a big part of the Spanish media. But then, as you know, when it comes to Ramos, there is this this sort of incredibly, I don't know what you'd call it, incredibly praiseworthy. That's a very weak word, but I can't think of a better one. When it comes to Ramos, there is this desire to kind of build up everything around him and make it about him. But it's certainly true that it changes the mindset of some of the other players. It's certainly true that it's about the message that's sent. It's also the Clásico, right? And Real Madrid, they don't get as motivated, rightly or wrongly, for Shakhtar and for Cadiz as they do for Barcelona. That is a reality, with or without Ramos. With Ramos, there's no doubt it's better. I agree with Jules, by the way. I think Ramos, at times, the defensive line, the structure of it, is really poor, and he's sometimes to blame for that. But there's no doubt that the other things he brings improves them. I think there's more to it than that. I think there's the work rate from a theoretically attacking position, but actually largely a midfield position from Marco Asensio, for example. The performance of Lucas Vazquez when he comes on and takes over from Nacho at right back. I think the significance of Casemiro, who of course had sat out it's the Cadiz game he sits out, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think there are things... I think there are things in there that are more than just Ramos, but Ramos is a figurehead and as a symbol of this game matters, let's do this right. There is no one like him. That's a reality.
I want to leave you on this point, because you know, I've stopped saying this because I feel like I'm being repetitive, but Real Madrid's record signing isn't there. Is waiting for Eden a little bit like waiting for Godot at this stage?
Well, he's in the squad for this Champions League game, which is a real surprise because it's ahead of time as well. It is ahead of time. We didn't think he'd come back until after the next international break. So in that sense, that's very good news. Obviously, let's see, A, whether he plays, B, how fit he is, and C, whether we can avoid a recurrence of the injury or the arrival of another injury, because obviously not all of his recaídas, as they call it in Spanish, not all of his kind of injuries have been just a recurrence of what was there before. Sometimes it's a related problem, or that he's not physically fit enough, so the muscles break down because of other injuries that he's had. I think there are very significant question marks about Hazard and about how little he's done at Real Madrid and about how bad it is. And I think actually a lot of these questions haven't been asked as much or as directly or as aggressively as they might have done. Partly, of course, because in his absence, Madrid did go and win the league. So, you know, there was a little bit of a sense that, well, it's okay, we found a way through this. I think this year they will need him because this is a team that doesn't really score enough goals.
No question about that. I was going to ask Sid about why Vinicius started writing Vini Jr. on the back of his shirt, which I think is just stupid. But you know what? This is the kind of minutiae that fascinate me. And nobody else. But it's silly. Stop doing it, Vini. There, I did it myself. Thanks so much, Sid.
Thanks, Sid.
Pleasure. Cheerio.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Clásico. Manchester United and Chelsea. A 0-0 draw. Frank Lampard, hey, he gets another clean sheet. Jules, you were there. For those of us watching on television, this was not a very good game. In fact, even your boy, Patrice Evra, talked about how boring it was. He was doing the job here in England on Sky. Was it that bad?
So I felt I had a different perspective because I was sat really close to the pitch again, and you could hear everything. You could see how intense it was, and it was quite cagey, but very intense cagey, if you see what I mean. So I was really into it. So I didn't find it boring. I didn't find it boring at all being right there in the stadium. But I can see there was not many. Of course, there was not many.
You didn't find it boring. Did you think it was good?
Yeah, like, I think it was good because you know what, I liked the Chelsea defensive shape, and I thought
you liked the back three.
Yeah, I thought that worked well. I thought Reece James, and again seeing it so closely once more, I thought he was fantastic.
What was United's front three?
So yeah, and I know, okay, Daniel James, who you think, you know, should play in the non-league. I know that Marcus Rashford, who centrally
was very good. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, had that chance at the end of the first. And on the other side, you had Juan Mata.
Yeah.
No, but listen.
I don't understand the need to change the system to a back three when you're facing that kind of threat. When on the other team also, Paul Pogba's not starting. I don't think you needed to be a super sleuth to figure out that he wasn't going to start. You knew it was going to be Fred, McTominay. So you knew that basically, in terms of creativity from the other team, it was either going to be Mata if he had space and time on the ball,
it was going to be Bruno Fernandes, and you got Conte and Jorginho there to hopefully deal with him. Or it was going to be Rashford creating something on his own, which he did later in the game.
Yeah, and at the end of the first
half. Do you need the back three just so you can have your clean sheet?
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole idea, and I spoke to Kante after the game, and Golo said, you know, we really didn't want to concede anything. We didn't want to give them any chances. And maybe even Frank would think at the end, rewatching the game, that they gave United too many chances even.
Yeah, they did.
So in a way,
and they didn't create enough at the other end.
No, yeah, and in the first half especially, Lampard keeps saying to Havertz, "Stay high, Kai, stay high." You could hear him so many times saying, "Stay high, stay high." And I guess he's clearly quite attracted by dropping deeper to get the ball, and they were quite deep in that first half anyway. And I just don't know. Like, we didn't see Werner at all. There was at some point Werner came to see Lampard on the side, and he was like, you know, they can't find me. I can't find any space. There's nowhere for me. I don't know. It was really strange going forward. But we saw it against Sevilla. Yeah. It looks like every time they would play with the back five, they would struggle to hit Werner and find Havertz. And if you don't find them, then you're not going to create anything.
It's something you need to work on. They haven't had time to work on it. You have to commit to it, I think, if you're going to do it. I don't think you can ever think of doing it without Thiago Silva. And you know Thiago Silva's not going to play every game, which is presumably, to me at least, why he's not committed to it yet. Maybe it's one for the future. On the United end, I thought United probably created the better chances.
Yeah.
Mendy making some very good saves to make up for that weirdo pass at the beginning, whatever. But obviously, Chelsea are going to point out to the big talking point, which was the Maguire on Azpilicueta. Do you have any rational explanation? Or
the rain? It rained a lot. Maybe because of the rain, they could not.
At the VAR,
working. I don't know, because it was blatant. Even from where I was sat, it was blatant.
I don't understand how you can handle something so badly unless you're purposely trying to screw everything up, right? All you do is you make the referee look doubly bad.
Yeah.
First of all, the referee should have seen it in full time, in real time.
So too.
He doesn't do it. Everybody talks about it, and you don't think that the referee might want to see that again.
Yeah.
You, whoever VAR, I don't even know. I didn't want to look it up. I outed David Coote last time. I don't know what Muppet was in there this time. But come on, man.
I know. It's quite crazy.
You're undermining the credibility of an entire system. That wasn't the only call, of course, this weekend with VAR.
Yeah.
But you know that they look at it and they decide, because let's be clear on this. It's not like VAR doesn't look at it. They look at it and then they decide, oh, we don't need to go and alert the referee. From United, no Pogba from the start. I know Donny van de Beek ever.
I mean, Pogba, I understand at least against Newcastle, I thought, okay, you rest him for PSG. Then PSG, you don't start him. And I thought, okay, you want really aggressive, hard-working midfielder because you're not going to have... Okay, I get it. And you bring him on and he helps you winning the game at the end, no problem. But in that game, at Old Trafford, it made no sense to me whatsoever not to play him. It really didn't. And he came on. And Cavani came on at the same time. So when I saw Cavani coming, warming up, my heart started beating. I was like, oh, Edinson, Cavani. And then I really thought, okay, you bring Cavani on. Him and Rashford will play up front. You'll have Bruno as a 10. Then you put a midfield three behind them three with Pogba in his favorite, best Juventus position on the left. And then you have McTominay sitting and then Bruno Fernandes and then Fred on the right. That looks great. I was so excited. And then what? And then Bruno played alongside Fred, so deeper, not Pogba. Pogba played as a 10 behind Rashford, behind Cavani, sorry, and Rashford on the left-hand side. And then Bruno at that time was on the right and then dropped deeper. And I was like, it made no sense tactically what Solskjaer did. I don't understand. I know they could have won it at the end because Rashford had that good strike and Mendy made the save. But I thought they made a complete mess of bringing Cavani and Pogba on.
Yeah, and there's a Van de Beek issue, I think.
What do you think is the issue? Why is he not in a game like this? Why is he not coming on?
You have three creative forces, you know, and especially with no Martial, no Greenwood, you know, I'm all for balance. But at some point, when the other team have basically a back five, man, go for it. Bring in the people who can go and unlock things. That is the part that I don't fully understand.
Yeah.
And this is why people still ask questions.
Do you think it's because Solskjaer didn't want him? That he's not a Solskjaer signing? That maybe Van der Sar and Ed Woodward or whoever.
I'm not going to go that far, but I'll tell you what. I'm tired about this thing about, you know, this guy wants him. He's his signing. He's this other guy's signing. You know, you're committed. These are the assets you have. Find a way to make it work. Jules, sticking with this a little bit, and this is our more intimate bit, but we say to the podcast listeners, because it's more intimate, you can once again run us through your feelings at seeing Edinson Cavani against Thiago Silva.
I mean, seeing Cavani started warming up at the end of the first half and he had all the United kit on, and I was like, I had a bit of nostalgia because of obviously the PSG years, and I was really happy for him. I think he's great at 33 to join a club like a huge club like this. I don't know how well he will do. I hope he does well. You saw when he came on, there was the first touch on that Bruno Fernandes free kick. That's what he's all about. Then later in the game, Thiago blocks his shot on that cross as well from the right hand side. So I'm really hope he does well. I don't know. It was nice to see him after so long. It was nice to see him playing against Thiago Silva. The two, I know you.
Okay, you had your moment. No. That's fine. It's fine.
It was just lovely. I loved it. I love Thiago Silva and I love Edinson Cavani. Anyway.
Going with United now, because I said I had no issue with a Cavani signing. If it's, United have the money, despite obviously the big losses that they announce, obviously they can metabolize that. It is 1 year. You're not stuck into these horrendous. Yeah. And I just want to make this clear, because, people have raised the point, why are you having a go at the signing of James or Aubameyang or Willian, and not Cavani, you closeted Red. I'm like, no, it's simply the fact that if it's a one-year deal, I don't have a problem with it. It's a 1+1, right? You cut him loose after a year if it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
I have issues when people commit enormous amounts of money in the long term, because then you end up with an Ozil situation. We treat Cavani as if he's going to be somebody who plays in certain games, gives him something different. I'm just wondering, though, seeing it, the other issues. Obviously, Greenwood's had issues off the pitch as well. Yeah. And he's still very, very young, even though he's phenomenal. Martial...
What do you mean? What do you mean? You're not convinced?
I wonder why we can't see a front two. Why we can't see a diamond. Why this obsession with wingers from Solskjaer?
Apart from the fact that... nothing to do with Martial's talent or level.
No. What I'm saying is because, nothing to do with Martial. But obviously Martial can play wide. Martial can play through the window. You got Martial through the window, Rashford. It seems like they're wedded to this idea, and I heard this a lot during the Mourinho and Van Gaal years and the Moyes years. People have this memory of Manchester United on the break sweeping across. Yeah. United can't be and are not a counter-attacking team. You simply can't be if you're Manchester United. You can play the transition game, you can press high or whatever, but first and foremost, you need to be a team that can generate shots and chances against an opposition that sits, as I see it.
Yeah.
And that means getting creative, talented midfielders on there. And I think that also means playing with two strikers. He's never going to do this, is he?
That's why I was really hoping when Cavani came on for the last half hour. Okay, he's going to do it. Great. Let's see. I think you need to try it. You need to check it to see. And then Rashford went back on the left-hand side. I'm not sure he was really happy to go on the left-hand side either. He'd been kicked quite a lot through the game, to be fair. But I don't know. Try it. You've got Bruno Fernandes, who's perfect in that free role behind one or two strikers. Use him. You've got Pogba then, who he's going to be much happier in that midfield three
as
well.
And you have Van de Beek too.
And Van de Beek can play there. Even Fred, it would make so much sense to try that diamond, that 4-4-2 with the diamond midfields.
And if you're as much of a Mataholic as I am, you also have Juan Mata, who of course has also played there.
It makes a lot of sense.
I don't see this combination. So from a team that maybe should be playing with two strikers but won't, to a team that seems intent on playing with no strikers when Kai Havertz plays as a false nine. Do you get this? Do you understand this when you've got Abraham and Giroud? We talked earlier about going to the front, going to the back three.
Yeah.
Havertz as a false nine works, and I've said this before, if he has a lot of players around him, if you have a team that's playing high up the pitch, he can shield the ball, he can play the 1-2, he can get a shot off. When he's a false nine and he has to drop off to go and get the ball, it doesn't work. It's not, he's not that kind of player.
No, I can see why you could try it, because then you could have Werner and Pulisic and all their pace making that running behind, and then you use your force number nine to free all that space, and having them running is great.
But then play him in the, go the whole hog then, play him in the hole and play those two guys as a front two.
Yeah, or something like that. But, if that's your idea, at least try it. But on Saturday, they didn't try it at all. There was none of that. They never really tried to play in behind the United back line. There was never, like I said before, that Werner, they could not find him. And Pulisic in the end had to do things by himself and on his own, and it just never worked. So I don't know if, I still think that Havertz's best position is behind Timo Werner, for example, if he's your striker. But then you have to play him, you have to feed him a lot, yeah. And that's not what they do.
I think there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, they still haven't found the right formula, but you know, they've played a few games already now. You know, they played, 10 games in all competitions, something like that? Yeah, 8 or 9. They should know a bit better than you know, us still questioning why they haven't really improved going forward.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough of that. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
Cristiano Ronaldo still out, but Paulo Dybala makes his return and Juventus draw 1-1 with Verona. Jules, Andrea Pirlo is still experimenting. Fine, but he has dropped 6 points in Serie A already. And there's a huge clash with Barcelona coming up in midweek. Are the screws turning on him a little bit?
I mean, you would hope that if Juventus took a gamble like this by appointing him, it's because they're going to leave him a lot of time and you know, keeping in place, not putting him under pressure after 5 or 6 games.
You would hope,
right? However, there's still some things that I'm not really convinced by, don't really understand. I mean, I could see some of the stuff he was trying to do, Bonucci, you know, stepping up a little bit when they want to build from the back because of the press, etc. But why is Kulusevski not starting a game like this when you know that you're going to have a lot of the ball and he can get at people and take on people? I'm not so sure. I still think that in the last 30 yards, they still need to do a bit more. Maybe the wing backs or the full backs have to be a bit more involved. But
maybe one of the full backs can't be Bernardeschi. I mean, yeah, I don't know. I love the guy, but another really bad performance.
But that's
in
always
that
a stretch, though. You know, don't you think it's always a stretch to ask him to play in that position?
You know what? At some point, dude, you want to get on the pitch. This is what you have to do. It's still football. There's still a ball. There's 11 men. The stretch, like this whole idea about, ooh, well, he's on this kind of. What position does Bernardeschi play? Because I still don't know. I don't know if he's a winger. I don't know if he's a wing back, attacking midfielder. I have no clue. So at some point, dude, you got to man up, get on the pitch, and make it work.
They hit the woodwork twice. They could have, you know, Silvestro had a few goals. So they could have won the game, and we would not talk about
that. They had a goal disallowed, which, again, correct decision, but, you know, it was one of those toenail offsides, like at Crotone. You have to get out of this mindset of simply judging by results. I would be more concerned in this game by the fact that they only started really playing after Verona scored. That is what would concern me more. But let's credit Verona. They're a really good team.
They were good. And Dybala, I think, showed a lot of glimpse that he's back to his best. Inter win away to Genoa 2-0 with Romelu Lukaku carrying them again. But Gab, why are they so angry with UEFA?
Well, they're angry over this business. I do think they have a point. So they play Borussia Mönchengladbach in midweek. Ashraf Hakimi, who, you know, for my money, is probably potentially Inter's second most important player.
Yeah.
He takes a test in the morning and he tests negative. So they're like, okay, fine. Go and train with your teammates. Then they go in the lab
goes and looks at the sample again and says, ooh, it's a weak positive, actually.
What do you mean a weak positive anyway? Like,
it means that there's a, I'm not an epidemiologist or a doctor, I think it means that there's a small amount of potential virus there.
Wow.
I don't know. So then he has to miss out the game, and he goes, he gets tested again, and he tests negative. Then he gets tested another time, and he tests negative again. And look, I don't know if it would have been a different result with Ashraf Hakimi on the pitch against Gladbach. I do know Inter threw the game away. I also know that they're a much better team with him on the pitch.
Yeah.
But those are 2 points dropped, and that adds up to money, and you have to get this right. You have to have a procedure and a cutoff, and you have to get those decisions across clearly. By the way, if he really was positive, not a false positive, and he tests positive in the morning, but you don't get that, and you get a false negative, you say he's negative, and you allow him to train, that's even worse.
It is.
So
and
you need UEFA, to sort it out.
UEFA was so tough with all the clubs in the Champions League and the Europa League, with that protocol is far stricter than in the leagues, and then they themselves mess it up. Like
it's not like Alexander Shefferin is sitting there in a lab with like a test tube.
Not him, but you see what I mean? At least don't get it wrong.
Exactly. Whatever lab you send them to, make sure they get it right. Jamie Vardy comes off the bench to score against Arsenal for the umpteenth time. Jules, it's a third defeat in the last four in the Premier League for Arsenal, but Thomas Partey made his league debut, so that's good, I guess. And before Jamie Vardy had his party, Arteta's plan seemed to work, finishing.
He'd played a little bit at City, Thomas Partey, so that was his first start in the league. And I thought the first half was good. There was a lot of good things from Arsenal's play. Thomas Partey was involved.
Disallowed goal,
and probably rightly so for Xhaka's position on Lacazette's header. So there was a lot. And then the second half, it was far more complicated for them. Leicester played a bit higher with a bit more intensity and eventually scored, because as you said, Vardy always scores against Arsenal. But there was not much response from Arsenal, from Arteta. I guess it's still a work in progress, a lot on what they want to do.
I don't see this forward progress. I feel like the forward progress that we saw earlier, I think, is slowing down a little bit.
I mean, I guess oppositions know how you play as well now, so you need to find other things than just what you've been doing for the last 10 months.
Come on, man.
No, but it's true. Before the game, if I asked you how will Leicester play in that game, you would have told me exactly like the way they did, 5-4-1, like they did at City, and they played exactly the same.
Right, so you knew that was coming. Yeah.
So you need to find, another way of, they're not going to press you high. You, there's no need for you to build from the back, because they're not going to be there. They're all going to wait for you in their own half. One of Arteta's strengths, right, has been when they press you high, you beat the press by playing from the back, even if that's a bit risky, like we saw against Rapid Vienna on Thursday, and that cost you a goal, but that's what you do, and then you find spaces, and you go forward, and then you score. If they're all of 11 of them waiting in their 30 yards, you need to find something else, like switching the play quicker, like you did in the first half, but not so much in the second half.
Or maybe like a World Cup winning attacking midfielder.
Oh, I see where you're going. I'm not going to go there.
By the way, just while we're on this, and we have more time because it's a podcast segment, what did you make of his agent spoke to, his agent, the doctor, and I can never remember his name, but spoke to James Ollie. And he said that the club owes him the real explanation, and whereas the club say it's just a footballing issue. Where do you stand on this?
Well, Arteta spoke to Ozil, told him why he was not in the Premier League squad or the Europa League squad. So,
and it was
Ozil
a footballing
knows.
Issue.
Well, I would think that's what Arteta told Ozil, right?
Well, it's what Arteta told the rest of the world as well.
Yeah, and Ozil, but Arteta said, I spoke to Ozil, he knows exactly why. So why are they not coming out and saying, like, oh, we need an explanation? You've got it. Arteta told you what was the reason why.
I think implicit on this, if we're going to be grown-ups here, is that Ozil's camp says it's not a footballing issue. It can't be a footballing issue because I'm better than all these other guys. Equally, let's be grown-ups here, if it's not a footballing issue, the club and the club admit it's not a footballing issue, if it's something to do with his views on China or something to do with him not taking the pay cut, then the club land themselves in a whole bunch of legal trouble. And I think it's pretty disingenuous to pretend that this is not the case. So, frankly, I can't really blame the club either way on this. I just wish that maybe they'd learned a little bit. I feel a little sorry for Ozil, but then equally, I also said, dude, if you want to play, cancel your contract, go play somewhere else for free.
Yeah,
right? As simple as that.
Arteta,
so this whole like, oh, it's so sad, Ozil's not allowed to play. I don't get that.
No, but Arteta wants to win football matches. If he believed that Mesut Ozil could help him winning football matches, he will play him. He's not stupid.
Yeah.
He's very pragmatic. It's because he doesn't feel like right now, in the way he's playing and the form that Mesut Ozil is in, it could help him winning football matches. I think it's as simple as that.
I do think there's a lesson to be learned there about signing players in their late 20s to massive long contracts. And it's obviously a lesson which Aubameyang, Willian perhaps hasn't fully been learned or appreciated. But that's a whole other issue.
Manchester City dropped points too, held 1-1 by West Ham. Gab, what is Pep getting wrong?
Well, I think what he's getting wrong is that in games like this against teams that defend in big numbers and defend deep, last year, or for the last couple of years, he had two guys named David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne who could conjure something out of nothing.
So you can't win football matches without Kevin De Bruyne?
No, but I'm saying it's a lot easier to win it when they're there, right?
Yeah,
so David
Silva's
gone. Kevin De Bruyne has obviously been injured. He came back. He played at the end. I think that's part of it. Bernardo Silva, I think in the club's mind, right, Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden will eventually step into that role, but Bernardo Silva's had, I think, a really poor start to the season. I think,
and last year as well.
And wasn't great last year. I think he can do that. Phil Foden, obviously still very young. Raheem Sterling, again, another player who resolves the one-on-ones out of nothing. He's not going through a great patch. I think it's as simple as that. I don't think it's time for Pep to go and revolutionize everything. I think it's also going to help when they're more solid at the back, too.
And Sergio Aguero came off injured as well, looked like a hamstring, which...
Which means again, more Sterling at centre forward, which...
Yeah, or someone else, because Gabriel Jesus is still injured. So, they've got injury issues, which I get, and it's not easy at all, and they've had a really bad run of it. But I still think they lack so much fluidity when they play going forward, which is so unlike Pep's teams.
By the way, shout out to Michael Antonio for his overhead kick.
Yeah.
Paris Saint-Germain roll over Dijon 4-0 as my boy Moise Kean, or Moise Kean, depending on the country's in and the point, depending how he feels you should call him, opens his account with two goals. Jules, is Tuchel, if Tuchel keeps rotating like this, my boy should get on the pitch plenty, right?
He will. And you know what? He's 20. He's very talented. He works hard at training. He scored two goals, which I think would do him a lot of good for his confidence and everything. Great. I thought he played well the other day when he started against Nîmes. The French were a bit harsh on him, I thought, considering it was his first game. And I just hope that this is the start of something good for him. They need him anyway, because Kylian Mbappe cannot play every game. Mauro Icardi is injured right now. He could be
the next Eric-Maxime Choupo-Moting. Or
even better, let's hope. Robert Lewandowski is breaking records again. His hat-trick in the 5-0 destruction of Eintracht Frankfurt on Saturday means he's the quickest player in Bundesliga history to reach double figures in league goals. Gab, you have any more superlatives? And by the way, how big is Alphonso Davies' injuries for Bayern?
So on Lewandowski, no, I don't have any more superlatives.
It's too easy for him.
I just think he's been in the zone for a long time. I remember goes a couple games without scoring, and people are like, oh, what's happening? Nothing's happening. I thought Eintracht would give him a better game than they did. My boy Bastos, sadly, missing a very good chance. But it's not just him. I mean, Kimmich spreading passes. Kingsley Coman, without Serge Gnabry, I guess Gnabry's going to be available again now, but after another COVID fiasco. but also, Leroy Sané scores an absolute worldie.
After coming on,
possibly goal of the weekend. As for Alphonso Davies, you feel bad for the kid. He's still very, very young. But again, from a footballing perspective, hey, look, I have a World Cup winning left back who's been starting most of the season, and he just goes and slots in seamlessly. So I don't think that much of an issue. New look from Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool as he plays Jota, Mane, Firmino, and Salah together in the 2-1 win over Sheffield United. Jules, will we see more of this, or is it just kind of necessity with Fabinho at the back and injuries and whatnot?
No, I think it will depend who they play against. You know, if they play against a team that plays really deep and they have a lot of the ball and not much space to work with, then I think Jota could be interesting in that position. I think he can bring you, he's such an intelligent player that he can bring you, I think, a lot from midfield behind that front three. So I think it was good for Klopp to try it. It worked in a way because they won. It could have been better, I guess. They still created a few chances. Jota scored. I think good. You take that plan and then maybe you work on it at training and you start again in another game similar to, to this one in your approach. I'm all for trying new stuff,
Give it a shot. It was important to get the 3 points. Yeah. Joint top of the league now. But still, I was hoping to get some more Curtis Jones.
Ah, oh, no. Liverpool wins means that the John Everton at the top of the table since the Toffees lose to Southampton 2-0. Gab, this was not a good performance regardless, but what did you make of Lucas Digne's red card? I mean, Carlo was not happy. He called it a joke, didn't he?
He said it was a joke because it was a joke. Yeah. Now, I don't agree with Carlo that this is related to the Richarlison sending off last week, or the Pickford, or whatever other nonsense. I just think it was just a bad call in a weekend of bad calls where, again, VAR can look at it and can say, hey, referee, maybe you take another look. This was a red card. You could intervene. But no, he decides not to. I don't think, I don't know. I just thought it was an absurd call, frankly.
Is it again like you don't want to put the referee in a bad position by telling him you got it wrong, and they don't like doing that here in England? They prefer doing the other around, so the ref has missed something. They flag it up, he goes and says, okay, you know, which is so better than making a mistake and then having to come back on your mistake, if you see what I mean.
Like, the reality is, you know, you saw how many FIFA referees there were at the last World Cup from England, right?
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah.
This is not a great moment for the referees as a whole. No, and look, I'm not saying they're all bad, but they are out of step with the rest of the world. And why they continue interpreting this way, oh, no, the referee, we're undermining his authority. The referee sees it once in real time. Who knows what he saw, okay? Yeah. You should feel free to flag it up to him, unless, of course, you don't think that is a straight red and that's legitimate, and then whatever. But there's a lot of work to be done there, I think. Lanza's game is postponed in Ligue 1 due to a rash of positive COVID-19 tests. Jules, we flagged the problem of postponing fixtures.
We have got many times as well. They had 11 players and 2 members of staff.
And it's a lower threshold to postpone a game in France, right? Because, again, you guys like being different too.
Yeah, we do like different too. They said that if you have 10 players missing, then the game would be postponed, right, which is a lot. And yet...
But in England and UEFA, most of Europe, they do it differently. They say you need to have a minimum of 13 players fit, whereas they just say, France, you say, you just need 11 players out.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have a squad of 80 players.
30. Yeah, you still have enough. And they could, I guess, they could have played, but Nantes had to go back home, having already traveled to the north of France. The game on Friday against Marseille might not happen either, so you don't know when those games would be played again, because there's hardly time, you know, to do it. Again, it's so congested. Let's hope that all those players are fine and all the people in Lens.
And when it starts affecting teams in European competition, then
exactly,
it becomes a major
Marseille
issue.
Then play obviously against Man City on Tuesday in the Champions League. So both Insigne brothers scores, but it's Lorenzo's team that gets the win as Napoli beat Benevento. Gab, who's your favorite Insigne, by the way?
Well, Lorenzo is the better Insigne,
of course,
as he showed a phenomenal strike, I thought, but. You feel for his brother. There's actually 4 Insigne brothers. There's 2 other ones. Yeah, I think when it comes to sort of fraternal footballing dynasties, it's not them. It's probably the Hazards now.
Yeah, I think so.
Although the Mondandas as well, right?
Yeah, old goalkeepers too.
Although, is Steve still the best? Or is there some younger Mondanda I haven't discovered yet?
No, I think Steve's still the best. It might be the best forever, you know. But,
gotcha. Yeah. What was funny about this was... The two are pretty competitive. Obviously, they love each other, brothers. But I don't know if this story's apocryphal and might not be true, but I'll repeat it anyway because I think it's funny. Roberto used a very typical Neapolitan.
During the game.
Yes, during the game, towards his brother. A bit of an insult after the two had, got head-to-head, which involved making disparaging remarks about your mother. And then he kind of stopped and says, whoa, that kind of came out. It's kind of an autopilot there. And obviously, they obviously have the same mom. So I think he took it back and they all had a big laugh about it.
Do you know the last time that happened in Serie A? Two brothers scoring against each other?
Two brothers actually scoring against each other.
Yeah.
And logic would suggest maybe the Inzaghi brothers, since they were strikers. But
no, it was in 1949. From Hungary, the Nyers brothers. It's Hisvan from Inter and Ferenc Lazio.
I did not know that.
1949, the last time that happened.
Wow. I would have taken it as read that the Inzaghis at some point, since they both scored a lot of goals, were scored against each other.
But apparently no.
Do you know the and of course the Baresi brothers?
Yeah.
Who captained Milan and Inter in the Milan derby, like the
cool.
Neville brothers.
That's the Neville brothers.
Although that wasn't a derby.
No, it wasn't a derby.
Anyway. Real Sociedad are top of La Liga as David Silva puts on a masterclass,
so
2 assists.
So lovely.
Jules, it's what we like to see, right?
Oh, so nice. I mean, they lost Martin Odegaard, who's arguably their best player last season, who went back to Real Madrid, but they're still so nice to watch. David Silva just fitted in so nicely. He's still so good. I mean, he's still so good even at his age. And then you've got Oyarzabal. I mean, it's such a nice team to watch. And they're the top of the La Liga, and they deserve it. And they've played some really nice stuff. And it's good. I think it's lovely for Spanish football, again, to see them at that kind of level. Borussia Dortmund beat up Schalke in the Ruhr derby. Gab, what did you learn? That Erling Haaland is a beast?
Yeah, I learned that. I learned that Schalke are absolutely terrible.
Shocking.
You know, again, the goals didn't come until the second half, but they could have easily come earlier. Julian Brandt playing behind a striker is much better than Julian Brandt playing as a pretend false nine. Honestly, I don't like that expression anyway, but no, he can't play striker, and this is a different team with him. Look, I thought, you know, as bad as Schalke are, this is potentially a trap game given their defeat in midweek and, you know, the difficulties the week before. But no, they got it done, and my man Manuel Akanji as well.
I know, it's cool.
Nice to see. So indeed. Well done, Lucien. See, Lucien,
you see, nice words eventually from you for Lucien.
Exactly. Now, Jules, I don't watch the championship at all, but when Leeds came up, plenty told me that, including Mark Ogden, I might say, that Patrick Bamford was going to have a problem scoring goals in the top flight. Jules, he's got 6 and 6. He's doing just fine, right?
Yeah, he's doing great, and he could have even scored more against Aston Villa on Friday. He missed a couple of chances as well. He's there in the right position. I think he's improved so much on his movement. He was always a very intelligent player, but I think Bielsa has worked so much on him, on his movement and how clinical he could be. So well done. Let's see if he can keep it going. Ajax beat VVV Venlo 13-0, setting a new record. They hold the old one as well, by the way, before. Are you impressed, Gab? Or is this just needlessly running up the score as you...
Hey, my feelings, my culture, your object is to win the game. It's not to go and score a billion points if you don't need to. People bring up goal difference or goal differential, as they call it in the States. First of all, it's called goal difference, not goal differential. This is stupid. I don't believe in goal difference.
So what, you stop playing?
You don't need to stop playing, but I only watched the highlights on YouTube. I got to say, VVV, terrible. Absolutely terrible. This tells me absolutely nothing. It was 4-0 at halftime. I'm not saying Ajax shouldn't have scored. In some cultures, that's how you show respect to your opponent. You keep scoring them. It just means it's absolutely meaningless to me.
Shout out to Lassina Traore, the Burkina Faso striker for Ajax. 5 goals, 3 assists. That's pretty.
That's called padding your stats. Right, so we got time for today. Thank you for joining us. Jules, let's come back on Thursday and do this again, shall we?
Yeah, of course.
All right, sounds good. Till then, love the game, love yourself, and love your neighbor.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.